As the turn of the 20th century settled, America found itself world leaders in steel and oil production, and at the center of the technological achievements and discoveries that would carry the world forward for the next century. In 1904, Theodore Roosevelt won his first presidential election after taking over the White House, following President McKinley's assassination in 1901. Henry Ford, 12 years after creating his first gasoline-powered engine, would set the new land speed record by driving the rechristened 999, 91.37 miles per hour, on an ice track carved into Lake St. Clair's Anchor Bay. The U.S. Army would begin work on the Panama Canal. In London, Peter Pan premiered on stage. The year also saw the birth of Salvador Dali and Dr. Seuss. Longacre Square was renamed as Times Square. And on New Year's Eve, 1904, for the first time, people celebrated the turn of the calendar there. But our story starts and ends in the Midwest, where St. Louis was hosting the Louisiana Purchase Exposition, or St. Louis's World Fair. The event, which featured more than 60 countries, including exhibits from 43 of the 45 states, was attended by 19.7 million people and cost over $15 million, saw the mass public exposed to novel new ideas of technology. St. Louis's World Fair played host to the first public display of the X-ray machine. Attendees were also given their first view of a wireless phone that transmitted messages from inside the fair's Palace of Electricity to a telephone receiver out in the courtyard. The creator, Alexander Graham Bell. But alongside hosting a World's Fair, the city of St. Louis wanted to host another international event, the Olympics. This would be just the third modern Olympic Games and the first hosted by the United States. The 1904 bid was initially given to Chicago, a city that St. Louis rivaled with over being the heart of the Midwest and the hub of American transport. But when a rich St. Louis citizen threatened to hold a competing sporting event, the Olympics were handed over to the Gateway of the West. At the time, travel costs were incredibly high and many athletes from Europe were unable to make the trek across the Atlantic. USA won 239 gold medals that year. The next closest country, Germany, just 13. In no other competition was the podium so representative as the 1904 Olympic Marathon. All three runners to medal were from the United States, but our story is not about American athletic domination. Instead, it is about American greed and the sometimes cruel nature of scientific experiments. It is about grueling heat and dog chases. It's about abandoned peaches and bad apples. And for our champion that day, Thomas Hicks, it was about surviving the 130-degree heat index and 26-mile run, thanks to an elixir of brandy, egg whites, and rat poison. Let's get weird, sports. Hello and welcome to the first edition of Let's Get Weird Sports, Tales of Weird Sports. Tonight, you are here with me, Casey Bartley, and Paul M. Banks of thesportsbank.net, and we are going to tell you why rat poison and brandy should be the cocktail of St. Louis. But first, Paul, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you? I'm excited to get this started.
I am too. You know, we've been talking about this for a few months privately, and I think we're starting off with a big bang. This story is pretty crazy. But before we get into that, it's summer. We're no longer cold. What have you been doing to enjoy it?
I've been out at the pool. I've been swimming laps. I've been out running a little bit, not running when it's too hot out, which we'll go into our story later tonight. We'll get into that. But I've been doing a lot of traveling, and it's good to be home now. And I went away on two trips, and both had a Purdue theme, actually.
Yeah, you went, I do believe, to what, Spain?
Right. So I'm at the gate at O'Hare, getting ready to go to Barcelona, and there's three girls in a Purdue Athletics t-shirt, and I'm like, what sport do you guys play? And they're like, cheerleading. I'm like, oh, okay.
National champions, then?
They were off to... Is Purdue cheerleading national champion?
They won the national title last year.
Well, you know, that good for them for being...
That would have been good knowledge for you to have at that moment.
Yeah, I would have said that instead of telling them that I'm a regular on the Hammer and Racing podcast.
Yeah, I would have led with, I was impressed by your campaign towards the title last year.
So they're at this gate, and then like a bunch of kids show up. So then we move to the actual gate we should be at. And our 10 p.m. flight did not leave O'Hare until 1 or 2 in the morning. And I've never seen any entity that could make cheerleaders like lethargic or not enthusiastic or unexcited. But by the time we left, they were all just like, because we're first, I'm like, where is this plane? There's no plane at our gate. And yeah, American Airlines, this is on you. We're calling you out. And then we get like a...
Paul, can I just say this is our first episode? We're still looking for sponsors. Let's not throw any airline under the bus.
Oh, and I guess I can't talk about Iberia here on the way back then. But so we get like the third choice plane that was supposed to be in a hangar overnight, and it has no in-flight entertainment because our four-hour delay would be an extra 10 hours to download all the entertainment. And I am just like, hey, I said to the cheerleaders, we're going to Barcelona, boiler up. They're like, yeah, whatever. Just get there in one piece.
There were... Couldn't you just let them, like, enjoy not being in pom-poms and having to hoorah every second?
Well, I just was like, hey, after all we've been through sitting at this gate, to their credit, the airline gave us, like, meal vouchers in the food court. I thought, like, hey, look, there's an actual plane at the gate. We're actually going to Barcelona, na-na-na. Oh, half of my heart is in Barcelona, na-na-na. All right, that song's about Havana, but you get the idea. No, they were just kind of like typical millennials and their phones and their...
Oh, Paul, buddy, we're on a podcast. We need people on their phones constantly.
So then my second trip was to the Indy 500, and that is interwoven into the fabric of Purdue as approaching 100 appearances by the Purdue Marching Band.
Yeah?
That's, there's
been... Where did you watch it from? You were up in, like, a suite, right?
No, I was not. I was in a covered seat, like, actual grandstand, which is... Oh. If I was in the sun, I'm not sure I'd be here right now.
Can I tell you a secret? Like, I'm from Indiana. I'm from Lafayette. 30 years, mostly spent in the state. I've never been to an Indy 500.
Wow. You may have to have your Hoosier card revoked.
That's fine. I can't get up for racing. I can't.
You don't want to go just even once for the spectacle, though?
I see drunk, dumb white people everywhere. They're not rare.
Yeah, but this is like, these are guys wearing t-shirts that say America, World War Champions, and Kid Rock for Senate hats. Like, this is another level.
Look, you live up in Chicago where it's all nice and fancy and you can go find all your hipster friends everywhere. I live in the heart of this. They're all over the place.
That's a fair point. That makes perfect sense. That is unassailable. Like, I can't argue against that.
Like, I know like 20 people off the top of my head that could be like, you know where they're at this weekend? They're at the dirt track race down in Seymour.
Just the fact that it's dirt and it's racing kind of tells you everything.
That's real racing. Let me tell you, okay? That is real racing.
Have you been to Anderson? We tried to go last year, but...
I've been to one race. It was in Kokomo. I got hit in the face with flying dirt at like 70 miles per hour. And the cars went fairly slow. I was unimpressed all around.
Well, I'm not a big racing guy. It's not that exciting, but I do enjoy...
Did you get drunk at the Indy 500?
Oh, I think that goes without saying.
So you lived it, at least.
Oh, yeah, of course. I've done three of them, and, you know, you got to get up so early. It's not hard to... It's not hard to get drunk when you get an early start and everything.
As fun as racing in cars is, my favorite racing... This is not true. Normally, do not care about marathons, cross country, running. It also seems boring. But let us tell you a story about the 1904 Olympic Marathon, which was the least boring race of all time.
Oh, I love that segue. Yes, it was the most exciting race. It's just a shame it was before the days of TV and smartphones, because this was one you wanted to see.
Yeah, it would have broke the internet like 25 times. And by me saying, let me tell you about it, I mean, let my buddy Paul here, who has been, he first introduced this story on a Hammer and Rails podcast probably about half a year ago. And we derailed for 20 minutes. And it was this one story that was so good that it spawned the origin of this podcast.
I think we were talking about one miserable basketball game that was just completely off the rails. And I said, it's like St. Louis Summer Olympic Marathon, in which now everyone will learn why brandy and rat poison should be the official drink of the state of Missouri. Because it's a race in which a man who was not sanctioned by any country and who was penniless and took a nap in the middle of it. He finished fourth and he took a nap in the middle of it. There's another guy who got in a car for part of it and then got out and he tried to get away with winning, but then
they nearly put the gold medal on him.
Yep.
So I think without further ado,
all right, let's get
the I think Paul's going to tell us when sports gets weird. This is what happens.
All right, so I've cracked open an apple brandy in honor of Thomas Hicks, the winner, eventual winner of this race, who was given brandy during it.
What are you mixing your brandy with? Because if you really wanted to stay on story.
Tonic water.
Not what I would have chosen.
It's called an apple fizz or something online. I don't know.
Sure it is.
Well, whatever. I'm not a bartender. I'm a storyteller. But at least for this night, I am. So it all started when my hometown had the Olympics. They were handed the third. This is the third Olympics ever in history, and it's the first in the United States. And
modern Olympics.
Right. Yeah. Modern Olympics. I'm sorry.
You get a lot of Greece listeners, okay?
Oh, I'm sure. They would be up in arms. You'd have some mean tweets to answer. So this is just another chapter in the storied rivalry between St. Louis and Chicago and why those people down there hate us so much. And sometimes, I guess, we hate them, but most of the times we don't think of them because they're... But this is from a...
I'm going to call timeout. You're sounding way too much like an IU fan talking about Purdue. Just settle a little bit on this, just ignoring the other person thing.
Well, what we're getting into is a different world completely, because this is when Chicago and St. Louis were legitimate rivals and on par with one another.
Okay.
This is a time when, you know, Chicago decided to go all in with the railroads and become the major rail hub of the nation, or certainly in the Midwest, and St. Louis decided to heavily invest in riverboats, and you can imagine how that turned out.
Yeah.
So Chicago gets the Olympics, and to be fair, it may have been a total shit show if we hosted it anyway. Because when I saw, you know, because we were up for the Olympics in 16 and Rio got it, and kind of seeing what happened there, I think we may have dodged a bullet on that one. I don't think it's the end of the world, but I'm not a fan of how St. Louis got this Olympics away from us. There's a man named James Edward Sullivan. And remember that name, because he comes up again towards the end here. He's the villain of our story, and for different reasons. He decided to get the AAU, Amateur Athletic Association. So Chicago's been planning these Olympics for 2 years. They're scheduled for 1904. St. Louis was having a World's Fair in 1903 to celebrate the centennial of the Louisiana Purchase, but they postponed it to 1904. But then when they've got this going on, they decided the idea was there's this World's Fair in St. Louis. The Olympics are in Chicago. This is going to cause cannibalization when you've got these two major events competing with one another. So this James Sullivan guy gets the AAU, which at this time is like track and field. It's just the best track and field athletes in the entire world are in the AAU, and he poured $6 million into it, which in those days, I mean, for the rate of inflation and everything. So he's got this major track and field championships going on in St. Louis. He got that scheduled. So now Chicago has to decide, are you going to do an Olympics where all these events are not going to happen?
Oh.
Or...
So, like, they would have chosen that over the Olympics.
Mm-hmm. So at this time, when you've got all those events, then there's not much else left. So Chicago can either postpone it a year, they can go on with just these events, or they can just concede it. And they gave in. And there was a gentleman named Baron Pierre de Coubertin of the International Olympic Committee. He was the leader of the IOC at that time, this Frenchman, given his name, he sounds French, if I pronounce it correctly. And he sided with Sullivan, and he sided with St. Louis.
Yeah. You know what's crazy? Because, like, nowadays, all he would have had to done is put, like, 1.5 of those million into the Olympic Committee's pockets.
Yes, and that would have been enough. Like, that, the bribery, obviously the rate of bribery was a lot more expensive. So this goes on during the World's Fair. And this is the World's Fair that was depicted in Meet Me in St. Louis, which is a movie that has like a ton of irony and unintentional comedy these days, because it's about a family that has the chance to leave St. Louis to move to New York. And they think that's a terrible, miserable idea because St. Louis is really awesome and they want to stay there. And they don't want to go to New York. So you can kind of imagine how that worked out. But because of this World's Fair, this Olympics goes on for 4.5 months, and it's just ridiculous.
4.5 months?
I'm not exaggerating. It was a 4.5 month long Olympics.
The Olympics lasted longer than my longest relationship.
The Olympics lasted longer than the NBA playoffs in a given year.
Oh, no.
Not longer than an NBA season, though.
Barely.
Your longest relationship was how long?
Look, we're not here to talk about my life. We're talking about the 1904 Olympics.
That's right. This is not a gossip website. Curious sport.
I would have gotten the silver medal if 4.5 months was the winning time.
Well, the guy who won this marathon finished. There have been 1,421 recorded times in Olympic marathon, in men's Olympic marathon history. This guy finished 1,398.
I think we would be doing a disservice to our listeners if we don't explain it, if we don't just go, like, there are results. Like, you can look it up on Wikipedia, you can Google it. There is a gold, there's a silver, there's a bronze medal. They're
right.
All USA runners. Thomas Hicks, Albert Corey, Arthur Newton. Thomas Hicks' time was, what, 3 hours, 28 minutes, and 53 seconds?
Yes.
He beat Albert Corey by a little over 6 minutes.
Yes.
And then he beat Arthur Newton by about 19 minutes. So all of them, how long is a marathon?
26 miles.
26 miles. The gold medal winner, Thomas Hicks, ran 26 miles at slightly above 8 minutes a mile pace.
Wow.
That's not great when you consider at the time that is saying he is the best runner in the entire world, which is what the Olympics are designed to tell you.
Right. But this was not five. There were 600. That's crazy. There were 630 athletes competing at this Olympics. That's it. And 523 were American.
Okay.
12 nations, 12 whole nations. You got to remember, you'd have to take like
a boat,
Kenya or the Titanic across the ocean. And then you've got to take a 1,000-mile train trip on top of that. Pretty far to go. Like, you got to really be into it. You got to want it.
These guys are runners. Shouldn't they be able to like run their way there?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because the hero of our story is the man who did just that.
Yeah, not all competitors ran for a nation-ish.
Yes, Felix Carvajal. Like, every good story has a hero, and you gotta love this guy. He was from Cuba. He was a mailman, and he would run his route every day, and he would make money by just putting on, people, I guess, would pay money to watch him run all over the place, and yeah, I don't know how you could watch that.
Did he do it shirtless, at least?
Well, yeah, his outfit is a story in itself, what he ran in during that, but shirtless running season, sure. They say he ran the entire length of Cuba once. And if that is true, then he would have ran all the way from New Orleans to St. Louis, because Cuba did not acknowledge him. They rejected his efforts to, he lobbied them to represent the nation at the Olympics. They didn't go for it. They didn't pay him. So he like took up a collection just running around. He did like a running GoFundMe in 1904. And he gets enough money to get on a steamship to St. Louis, or not to New Orleans. And when he gets to New Orleans, he loses all the money he has gambling.
Do you know what he gambled?
It was dice. So he loses all his money on a roll of the dice. And he's got to go the rest of the way by just running and hitchhiking and getting on trains. And stowing away. And he makes it. And he makes it to a point where he's in long johns and a belt and a really kind of button-down shirt and a beret. And I'm pretty sure he's dressed in his mailman outfit. Like, he's got formal clothes and boots, and he's going to run in that because he has no other clothes. And an American discus thrower comes up to him and, like, makes him makeshift shorts, so at least
he... In other words, what you're telling me, he was the modern-day creator of jorts.
Yes, jorts were invented that day in St. Louis.
The breakaway pants were... Did you ever have those khakis that you could zip off the bottom for when you didn't know if it was hot enough to wear, like, pants or shorts?
No, I've never heard of such a contrast.
Those are a thing. I think I even owned a pair in middle school. And literally, like, it went around like a zipper, just like the way you'd zip up your denim jeans or whatever. And you could zip off your legs. Just they went from pants to shorts.
I like the concept. I like the idea in theory.
No, you don't.
I'm not sure if I like...
I'm just telling you, no, you don't.
Well, what about capri pants? Are those shorts or pants?
You should also not wear capri pants.
I've never owned a pair of capri pants.
Good job. Or do you think they cut him up so much that he, like, had the first form of Daisy Dukes?
No, they were, like, below the knee.
Are you sure? Our basketball players didn't even wear shorts below the knee till, like, the 80s.
Well, they were close to the knee. They weren't, you know, denim underwear like the Daisy Dukes are today. Yeah. Or like they were in the 70s. So, I mean, that is where the name comes from.
I'm guessing mid-thigh.
From what I saw in the pictures, it seems that way, but... What was really interesting about this dude is he just, like, obviously the man had a lot to overcome, and he was basking in the limelight, and he's stopping to talk to people during the race. This man who's running in jorts or running in thigh highs or thigh length shorts and his beret, he's in the middle of the race. He's just stopping to talk to spectators because everyone else is kind of like, from what they say, everyone else kind of, like, struggled, and they were, like, collapsing from the heat and humidity. And he, like, floated across the finish line. He just, like it was nothing.
And tell me if I'm wrong about this. The man had not ate before coming to the Olympics. Like, he hadn't ate for a little while. He stopped at an orchard midway through the run.
Yes. First, he went to a car that had peaches, and he stole peaches out of a car. I know. Listen, our listeners, all
committed theft,
been documented. We're not making any of this crap up. Like, this is all real. So he seriously steals peaches, and he's running around eating the peaches, and that wasn't enough. So, because he's penniless, he's starving. So he stops in an apple orchard. He steals some apples from the orchard, and he gets stomach
bad apples.
Real
bad apples.
There's bad apples in every bunch. And one account said he vomited and he had food poisoning. Another account I read that he had stomach cramps. Either way, he took a nap in the middle of a race in an apple orchard.
So I just want to recap real quick the score. He came from Cuba, lost all his money in New Orleans, made it there penniless to St. Louis without a country. He
never ran.
Stole peaches from a car.
Yes.
Stole bad apples from an orchard. Got possible food poisoning. Took a nap. He finished fourth in this race.
Yes.
Fourth. One off the medal.
So if he didn't stop taking a nap, and if he wasn't mingling and socializing with his fans, he probably would have won.
And that does speak to it was not a fun afternoon for a marathon. The race started in the afternoon. The temperature, I do believe, reached 92 degrees Fahrenheit. Humidity in the 90s, which meant a heat index of 135 degrees.
You know, from what I've been told, if the heat index is 105, you just do not exercise outside.
But thankfully for marathons, Paul, they provide a lot of drinking water throughout the race for their competitors.
Right. And this one had, they only had water at the 6 and 12 mile mark, and that was it. Do we want to tell the audience why?
Nope.
Okay. All right. So Felix Carvajal finished fourth. Never ran a sanctioned race before, and he never ran a sanctioned race again.
He's not the only one that would only run this race once. But Felix probably didn't even have the hardest day of the entire race. While you know, the Olympics are known for setting records and, you know, having first. The 1904 Olympics, this marathon represented the first two black Africans to compete in the Olympics. Two Tswana tribesmen, Lin Tao and Yamasani?
Yeah, your pronunciation is about as good as mine.
All right, so we'll go with Lin Tao and Yamasani. I have the real name and I have what they went by.
There were Boer War veterans. They were Boer War runners. They were messages. And the only reason they were there is because this goofy ass World's Fair decided to recreate the Boer War with actual people who were in the Boer War. So I'm sure that was a lovely and wonderful experience for all. And, you know, when you've got only 12 countries here, you need participants for this marathon. And when you make the ingenious idea of starting a marathon at 3 p.m., the hottest point of the day, on an extremely hot day, then again, you're going to need participants. So these two guys ran in it, and Tan is the guy that got chased. He was chased a mile off course by...
I say he had a disappointing day. They actually expected him to do a lot better, but for some reason, he ran into some trouble.
Yes, this race was not... I guess now would be the perfect time as ever, because I haven't covered this yet. This race was not like a sanctioned course, and all the runners were on this stretch of land or territory or whatever dedicated to the... They took four laps around a track in a stadium, and then they went out on these St. Louis streets, and they had to deal with cars, and this was, you know, very primitive cars, as it was 1904. Delivery wagons, railroads, trolley cars, people out walking their dogs. And some of these dogs were a little wild and rabid. And, you know, Tan got chased over a mile off course by a wild dog.
I think it's very important to just, think about that for a second. An athletic competition, the Olympics, how we think of them nowadays, a dog was able to chase a participant off course for a mile.
Yes.
There wasn't a single person around to be like, stop that dog. The dude just had to outrun it.
Well, you know, the thing that makes that really offensive and sickening and frightening is that, yes, there was that too. Like the cat excuse.
Fuck dogs.
Yeah, the cat gets it. The thing that made it really messed up was you had all these pacer cars or whatever following along the runner. You had support automobiles, so none of them bothered to help out this guy. Like, they didn't have, like, something to scare off the dog in the car.
But to be honest, what you just let us into was someone that had, somehow, miraculously, this dude who is running an Olympics without being planned, chased by a dog, probably scared for his life, had a better day than William Garcia.
Oh, my God. William Garcia was considered to be one of the favorites to do well in this race, and if it wasn't for a car, if it wasn't for a motorist who passed by, he probably would have died. He was found in a ditch lying unconscious, and he inhaled so much dust because these roads were not, this wasn't asphalt they were running on. There was cracked stone, and there was dirt and dust, and with these cars supporting the runners, obviously not supporting the African men because they didn't really, but all right, supporting the other guys, they kicked up all this dust, and so much dust got into William Garcia's lungs that it burned through his esophagus and
burned through,
melted the stomach casing. Yeah.
That is insane.
They
were literally just following a car and other runners, and the roads were so bad and dry that he breathed in enough of that to nearly kill him.
Yeah, I mean, it's St. Louis, man. It's St. Louis. This is what happens when they get an Olympics, and this is as much effort and planning as they put into it.
It was such bad conditions that it's almost hard to blame the man who nearly won this race, who nearly had a gold medal put around his chest.
Yeah, he's a guy that, I don't know if he's hero or villain, because
I think he's a genius. I think just flat out, like, superstar. Like, in today's world, he would be, like, he'd run things.
It is pretty funny. This is the ultimate, this is trolling before, 100 years before the word ever existed. Reservoirs.
This is my favorite part of the story. Everything about it is just so nonchalant. And like, he's the only person that has like a modicum of just like, this is what you should do. Like, this event was crazy. It's a 26 mile marathon, 130 degree heat index. You're just sweating, losing everything in your body. Half the people like don't have shoes. They haven't ate. They're all dying. And this guy is he had the right attitude.
Actually, you nailed it. You completely nailed it. I think out of everybody involved, well, the Cuban guy was pretty awesome too, though, I think.
No, he was great. Like it would have been a great buddy comedy.
Yeah, I mean, these two really kind of, they get it. Like, they somehow were able to look back at this event later and see the absurdity of it and handle it correctly. One last thing on William Garcia. He did recover. He was fine, and he actually raced again. So that's a good story.
Okay,
but
he's one of the few that raced again.
Yes. No. This guy that we're talking about did race again, and that story in itself, given what happened to him.
Yeah, I think we need to run over it because this guy, for a small part in American time, he was a gold medal winner of this race. They had the pageantry out. They were ready to crown him.
Fred Lors ran 9 miles, started cramping, dropped out, felt he couldn't go on, took a support car, was following him, just got in the car, and it...
Happily in the car.
He was like, it's hot as all get out. It's way too hot. I'm not feeling this. I'm done.
As he drove by the other runners, he waved at them like in a beauty pageant.
In fact, so much so that like he even demoralized some of his competitors. So his car ends up breaking down because, again, this is run on crazy streets that aren't paved and just horribly planned. And it's hot as hell that day and humid as hell. So he's standing there waiting, and it's going to be a long time before someone comes to take him and whoever else is in the car back to the stadium.
If I'm not mistaken, this is about the 19th mile of the race.
That's correct. It was approximately around there. So, and he's feeling good because he
10 miles of a ride. You feel real, like you feel refreshed. You're like, I need to walk this off.
So he's just going to start running again.
Yeah, it's quicker than walking.
So he starts running back to, was it called Francis Field? Is that the stadium?
Sure.
Well, it is now, I guess.
Soon to be Busch Gardens.
Yes, soon to be home of the St. Louis Football Cardinals. Actually, I think this was by SLU. I think this was all in the suburbs, but
it finished back in the stadium.
Yeah. So, all right. Actually, that's really important that we bring that up because people watching this, the people who braved the 135 heat index to watch this, they saw a bunch of guys run like 4 or 5 laps around a track, then disappear for a while, and then they come back to finish it.
For a long while, like 3 hours.
So I really hope they brought like a book to read or something. So they're in the stadium for a long ass time waiting for the runners to come back. And Fred Lors is making his way. And because he had the advantage of riding in a car for 10 miles.
He just comes running into the stadium like, hey, guys, I'm here. Oh, no one's here yet. Oh,
we've got no drones. We've got no smartphones. We've got the only thing that can out this guy. Just pure eyewitnesses. Word is their bond.
Well, his car broke down. He's an Olympic runner. I'm sure no one kept up with him.
So he's running into the stadium. And he's just like, hey, he's feeding off the crowd.
Right. They're cheering like a madman, I'm sure. Just like, you're awesome. Wow.
So he's like, okay, I'm going to go with it. And I'm going to win. I'm going to win this thing.
In all fairness, like, if you're in that situation, are you really going to say no?
Yeah, I like this guy a lot. I honestly think that he kind of improvised this. I don't think he had a plot. I think he just kind of...
No. Yeah, it's just kind of like, well, I'm rested now. I can run back there. There's probably water at the stadium. There's none on the race path.
Yeah, terrible. Just abomination while there was no water.
And like, I think, like, I don't know if we painted the picture enough. Like, he ran into the stadium. Everyone's cheering. He crosses the finish line. He takes a photo with Alice Roosevelt, Theo's, you know, President Roosevelt's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And they are about to put the gold medal on him.
They're about to crown him as the champion and the winner of the race.
Yeah.
And that demoralized the guy who did win, because this guy, Thomas Hicks, saw him like sit by and they're like, wow, this guy, because the real winner was in miserable shape, just falling apart. And he sees Fred Lors, who's just kind of like, wow, did this guy even break a sweat?
Yeah, looking just delighted.
So he's about to be crowned champion, and eventually he gets outed, or he outed himself. I'm not quite sure. How did he get outed? Did he out himself?
As soon as it was presented to him, like, as the other runners and witnesses, like, he's like, I didn't run the whole thing. Like, there was no, like, he never said, like, yeah, I ran all this. He was just kind of like, okay, give me the gold medal. Sure, I'll take it.
Right, there was no...
Yeah.
There was no...
It wasn't planned beforehand that he was going to take a ride for 10 miles and then run it out. He just kind of ran back to the stadium and they're all like, rah, 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 rah. And who can resist a party?
I guess it's like, yeah, if you win something or you're handed something that you didn't earn, and you're going to be like...
It's not like he didn't run 17 miles. It's a long time.
And the thing is, he wasn't... When he got to the stadium, he wasn't like, oh, now I'm going to... cheat and claim this. He was winging it the whole time.
And I'm sure he was still tired. He ran the last 9 miles. It's more than I could run in a row, or 7 miles.
I've never ran anything beyond a 10K. So if he run, you know, these people do a half marathon. I think that's brave. I think that's bold.
Yeah. So I mean, regardless of winner or loser, he's still a hero.
Yeah, so he gets a lifetime ban for what he did, because apparently the Olympic Committee didn't find it funny, even though we find it hilarious.
Yeah, but I think the thing that distinguishes all, or that extinguishes all of his blame, is eventually they let him back into racing. They realize,
right, the lifetime.
He got caught up in the moment. It wasn't like he was planning to do this.
Yeah, like, I mean, he was just having a joke. It was fun. And then he apologized a few months later. They reinstated him, his lifetime ban was gone, and he won the 1905 Boston Marathon.
And that leads us to Thomas Hicks.
Yeah.
Our gold medal winner of the 1904 Summer Olympics Marathon, who honestly might have had the worst run out of all of them. His journey was horrific.
Yeah, it doesn't help that he had, like, the dumbest manager in the history of all.
He was a science project running a marathon.
I mean,
there's one place to obviously start about this. It's the joke we started at the beginning of this podcast. But I'm going to let you, like, he had trainers. There were people responsible for him every leg of the way. And how did they combat these tough positions of running a marathon?
With raw eggs, brandy, and strychnine, i.e. rat poison.
I mean, strychnine sounds like the thing in Cat's Cradle that nearly destroyed everyone. And it's pretty much that bad in real life. Strychnine is rat poison. So what was that concoction again? The St. Louis brew?
The St. Louis cocktail, for all you Cardinal fans, because I know a lot of you are going to be listening to this, is brandy, raw eggs, no water, and strychnine.
Specifically no water. Just, nah.
Just if you...
We don't need to cut this. Pure strychnine.
Yeah, if you get dehydrated, sorry, there's no water for you, because Thomas Hicks was given no water, so you have to have that. Actually, if you could try to limit all, I mean, not limit, but if you could take a synopsis of all the crazy stuff in the story, I think the fact that rat poison, strychnine, was a stimulant, and it was like the idea that it was commonplace to give a runner that might be the wildest part of this whole story, I think.
I, one of my favorite sports writers who really got me into sports running was Hunter S. Thompson. You know, I love the Kentucky Derby story. I love all the stories in Vegas. all of them. And I was always impressed by how he could be like on these mind-numbing, altering drugs and write a story. This dude fucking run a marathon like Hunter S. Thompson writes a sports article. Tripping balls on rat poison.
Yeah, towards the end, he was completely delusional and...
couldn't even run, right? When he was...
stand up.
Yeah, the winner... They ended up, you know, they stripped Fred Lors of his title because he didn't run the whole thing, sure, but Thomas Hicks crossed the finish line being held by his trainers as he pantomimed with his legs running, and they decided that was close enough.
Right, and he was a man given alcohol, brandy, and rat poison.
You're drinking apple brandy right now, correct? Which is very apropos of the story.
I'm doing this for Thomas Hicks. Brandy is like something the men in the highest class of the Titanic had with cigars in a smoking room.
Do you feel better prepared for a marathon because of it?
I don't know if I could even do like a 0.025K right now with brandy.
Could you walk to the other side of your apartment right now on brandy?
Probably. The cat might have to hold me up, I think.
But that, like, it's... how is that acceptable?
For some reason, this was considered... do you remember the supplement Ripped Fuel, Ephedra?
No.
Ripped Fuel was a supplement, just an over-the-counter thing you'd get in, like a GNC. It was Ephedra, and, you know, Ephedra is pretty dangerous. And I guess in those days, strychnine had a quality that was just a really high-grade stimulant. In small doses would make you a better runner. Now, that is the rationale there. The rationale with brandy, for some reason, I mean, because they gave him brandy two or three times. I don't know if that's supposed to chase the strychnine or... because my brandy that I'm drinking right now has no strychnine in it. I just want to put that on the record. I am not having rat poison right now. But the funny part was they gave him raw eggs and no water. And instead of water, they sponged out his... mouth. I this is so, I know, like, we're not making any of this up.
It's so insane. Like, Rocky rat poisoning.
Right. Rocky meets rat poison meets Gilded Age robber baron.
Alcoholic. Yeah. Just.
I mean, because brandy, that is like the drink of like 1890s robber barons, right? Like, who drinks that?
Yeah. I have bartended for the last 7 years. I've made one brandy drink in my entire life. That's a gold medal winner. That's how weird the 1904 is. It's not just the weird people that fell away that didn't qualify, that even finished fourth. The winner was on rat poisoning, brandy, raw eggs, and was carried to the finish line.
At least his trainers wouldn't let him quit. He tried to quit several times. his trainer's like, nah, you're going to push on. And this is true. He lost 8 pounds in the process of running this race.
Wow.
And he collapsed. He fell unconscious. It took him an hour to revive him after he crossed the finish line.
The doctor saved his life, right? Inside the stadium?
Yes. And he took two to three milligrams of strychnine. One more dose definitely would have killed him. He never raced again. And that is your gold medal winner.
So I think it's important. Like, weird stories. This is all very strange, but all stories need two things. They need a protagonist. And they need an antagonist. Our bad guy of the story wasn't on the racetrack.
No.
Who is our bad guy of the story?
That would be James Edward Sullivan.
Ooh. The guy who made this all happen.
Yes, he's the puppet master. He's the guy who oversaw all of it. And he was the guy that got the Olympics moved there. And he is in the Track and Field Hall of Fame today. Should be booted out of the Hall of Fame, but he's there. He was eventually, after this race, he became secretary of the USOC, the United States Olympic Committee. He set this up as a giant science experiment. He could have killed all these people because this was all about purpose.
Now, we've alluded to it, but what was the science experiment exactly?
He only put two water sources, which was... and those water sources gave you dysentery because it was well water. And it's 1904, so you can imagine. And it's St. Louis. You can imagine what the drinking water is like.
Shots fired again.
Yeah, I said it. Come at me, Cardinals fan. So he made them guinea pigs in his just psychotic social experiment.
To run 26 miles with that little water alone, let alone if... Brandy, rat poison, raw eggs. That's your winner, folks. So now the question becomes, who is our hero?
Well, I forgot to mention a couple of guys that dropped out that even made this happen in the first place, which kind of set the stage. John Lorden won the 1903 Boston Marathon, and he was the favorite in this race, but he dropped out after 10 miles and he was vomiting profusely. And then another guy named Michael Spring, who was also considered to be a favorite, dropped out after 10 miles after running up a hill. So you already had a diluted field to begin with. You had not a lot of runners. You had the main favorites dropping out. Thomas Hicks has to be our hero in the sense that he persevered beyond anyone else.
He survived rat poison. No, actually, you know what? No. He didn't even finish the race. He was carried to the finish.
Yeah, but by that point, he couldn't even see straight. And by that point, he was like...
So go to a hospital, not the finish line.
These dumbass coaches wouldn't let him.
All right, I just can't go there. I'm gonna go with Carvel Holt. What was his name?
Well, he's got a lot of names.
Andorin Carverall is what I see. But what did you say his nickname was?
Well, he had a lot of names, but I'm just going with Felix Carvajal.
Okay. I to me, there's two obvious choices. It's either Felix Carvajal, who finished fourth with a lot of style, went through an orchard, stole some peaches, had dysentery possibly, took a nap, and still finished fourth. Or Frederick Loris, who finished at 3 minutes and 13 minutes, or 3 hours and 13 minutes. So he was, for 15 minutes, he was the gold medal winner, and he did it in style. He had the time of his life while every other runner went through hell.
I'm with you on that.
So I'm going to give it to him because, Carvajal probably should have run the race. Don't take a fucking nap.
I agree. It's your one shot at glory. You've never run a sanctioned race. You never ran again. And you're mingling with the spectators and you just take a nap in the middle of it. That's pretty.
He is the classic hare. Don't be an asshole and you win this race.
It's kind of funny, though, in that he seems to, from all accounts, he's the one guy who, like, had a good time. He's the one guy who enjoyed competing. He enjoyed the process of sports. But
you know who?
I'm with you with Loris because he's the guy who treated the event in the amount of seriousness that it deserved.
Yeah, you are right. And I think that is a key to life. Know your situation, know how serious you have to be, how serious you have to take it, and just go from that. The guy who should be most pissed is Albert Corey. He's the second place finish in the most interesting race of all time, and we don't have a single story about him. And he didn't even get a gold medal for it. And I don't know, 6 minute difference, he probably didn't get to watch Hicks the whole... I'm sure at some point he probably saw Hicks being carried by the trainers in front of him. Like, that is not a good feeling.
Yeah, he's only 6 minutes behind. He saw it the whole way. Yeah.
On his own legs. Like, he used his legs the entire time.
He's got a right to be angry.
Yeah. And if you're angry, you're not the winner in this race. So you know what? I think we have to say the hero of the story is Frederick Loris. Title, the winner, the gold medal in our hearts of the 1904 Olympics, the weirdest race of all time.
I can agree with that.
All right. I'm glad we got there. Paul, is there,
when the system itself is absurd and you've got somebody exposing the system for what it is, you got to side with them.
That would make such a wonderful 30 for 30, which is why we're doing this podcast. We want to cover these weird stories. This story, obviously, had 18 different avenues to run down. Once again, rat poisoning. That's a thing that runners used to be on. But I is there anything we have left off? Because I when we first went over the story, I just the basic peruse left me with like 5 pages of notes. So Paul, I think on a race that had, like you were talking about the Indy 500, they only turned left. This story turned about 500 different ways and they were all weird, but I think we've covered most of them. And what we hope to do with the series is to cover more stories like this. If you have any idea stories, go ahead and comment on one of our Twitters. Paul on Twitter, you are Paul M. Banks?
Yes, at Paul M. Banks on Twitter.
At Paul M. Banks. I am at Casey Bartley HR. I am a writer for Hammer and Rails. Paul is a writer over at thesportsbank.net, and by writer, I mean owner, writer, photographer, do everything man there.
Yes, proprietor.
No.
Renaissance man, sure.
And do you have anything coming up that you want to go ahead and plug and talk about?
I'm working on a book.
Are you?
Yeah, I've compiled some of my greatest hits and what I've learned about working in the sports media industry over a decade, and I hope to get it done by the end of the year. That'd be nice.
All right, so everyone pray for Paul's heart, soul, and mindset.
It's all about time management.
I think the lesson we learned today, if you ever run out of steam and you're out of rat poison, just have your team pick you up and carry you to the finish line. That's how you get a gold medal.
We got to, like, find Thomas Hicks's descendants and, like, have them. Better yet, Fred Lohr's and Felix Carvajal's descendants and have them on.
I just want like pictures of them, like stories about what they did afterwards. I think that's, we'll have a postscript of things we find out about the stories we've covered.
The epilogue,
there you go. Epilogue.
No, but really, I do want people to tweet us with ideas.
Yeah, no, absolutely tweet us with any weird stories that you know of. The weirder, the better. We're just here to, you know, you can find stories and takes about all the stuff going on currently, but like this shows, there have been some weird ass shit that you would never imagine actually happened. Most of this stuff, like when Paul was telling me this first time, I assumed he made it up. It's real. These things happen. Those are the stories we want to cover. So if you hear about that, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter. This will be up on Monday. We hope to do this every week or two. You know, rate us, review us, comment, all of that good stuff. Let us know what you think about this episode.
Share it with your friends. Get it out.
Yes. Share it with everyone. Give us money if you want to give us money. I don't know how. Run into us in the streets, hand us like a $20 bill.
An online tip jar. Well, no. The other day I went into the little cafe at my gym. And
your gym has a cafe?
Well, it's in the building. A lot of gyms have cafes. That's not
real. Again, to be honest, we don't know where we're going with this, but we're excited about the concept. We enjoyed this. We're going to enjoy continuing to do it, finding stories, talking about it, just having conversations about weird stuff. This has been Let's Get Weird Sports with my buddy Paul M. Banks. Check him out at thesportsbanks.net. I'm Casey Bartley. I write for hammerandrails.com. You can find my stuff there. And as the Irish singer-songwriter Eden says, I'm not singing for your XOs. I'm just singing because it's over. Have a good night.